When you ask the average person who celebrates the Seder, what is missing from the Haggadah? If they can reach back into their lessons from religious school, they will tell you that Moshe is missing from the Haggadah. And it's true, except for one brief mention, that Moshe is not in the Haggadah because we are supposed to emphasize the part that God played in the Exodus and not believe we were delivered by a human hand. But there is something else missing from the Haggadah, that once you hear it and you sit through the Seder, you cannot help but be struck by its absence. There is virtually no discussion about the land of Israel. It's true that everybody understands that the end of wandering is to get to the land. But the land is absent in the Haggadah because we didn't get there yet. Because for thousands of years, as Jews gathered around the Seder table and they read this book, they didn't have the land. And so it remained a presence only in the last page of the Haggadah, when it read, as our Haggadot read today, L'shana haba'a b'Yerushalayim. Next year. Next year will be in Jerusalem. That's not what this Haggadah says. This Haggadah says, L'shana haba'a b'Yerushalayim habnuya. Next year in a rebuilt Jerusalem. And that one word, habnuya, tells a remarkable story. In fact, this Haggadah represents that story. Because this Haggadah was sent to me this year, courtesy of Beit HaLochem, which is the organization in Israel that cares for wounded soldiers. And their story, of course, the story of the soldiers of Israel, is in large part the difference between L'shana haba'a b'Yerushalayim and L'shana haba'a b'Yerushalayim habnuya. You see, now we have a country. And what has happened in the course of having that country is exactly what God said to Abraham when it was first promised. When God says to Abraham at the beginning of the Jewish journey, Lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimoladcha u'mibeit avicha, go forth from your house, from the land of your birth, from the house of your ancestors, God concludes by saying, El ha'aretz asher areka, which we usually translate as to the land that I will show you. But some commentators insist that what that means is to the land where I will show the world you, where you will be revealed to the world, that the world won't know the Jewish people until you have a land, and then they will see. Think about it. Sometimes getting caught up in the rush of headlines every day, we forget what it was that we showed the world. Remember that the pioneers of Israel, the Chalutzim, the people who built the country, almost without exception, came from tyrannies, from dictatorships. They didn't grow up in democracies, neither did their parents or their grandparents or their great-grandparents. They were a collection of people who knew only tyranny. They went to a place in the world, in the Middle East, that knew only tyranny. And they built a democracy. They were a people who never fought a war. If you look in the Haggadot of the Middle Ages, of the 16th, 17th, 18th century, and you look at the Rasha, who is the wicked child, you know what they show under the Rasha? They show a soldier. Because somebody in an army was wicked. Jews didn't go into armies. Jews didn't fire rifles. Jews didn't fight. And so we collected a bunch of people from around the world who never knew democracy, who never fought a war, and they created a democracy, and they won war after war after war to stave off their destruction. We brought people from all over the world who didn't have a language. And we gave them a language that didn't even exist. Because you can't speak every day transactions in the language of the Bible. The Bible doesn't have a word for can opener and microphone. It doesn't have a word for wristwatch and automobile. The word for electricity in Hebrew is chashmal. It's taken from the prophecies of Ezekiel. You got to do a lot of work to make Hebrew a modern language. And in a generation, we gave the world Nobel Prize winners who wrote in Hebrew. The prophecy was exactly right. El Haaretz Asher Areka, to the land that we will show you what you are, what you're like. Was every lesson wonderful? No. There are some parts of the land that we don't like so much. Go drive in Israel. Get in a car, try the roads. You'll see. There is a wild streak in the Jewish people. You know the joke about the Israeli driver who brings his car in to be fixed, and the mechanic looks at it and he says, "What's the matter with the car?" And he goes, "It's the brakes. The brakes are shot." And the mechanic looks at it and he says, "You're right. Your brakes are ruined. There's no way I can fix those brakes." The guy says, "I know you can't fix the brakes. Just make the horn louder." That's how we drive. A little bit in Beverly Hills and a lot in Israel. We have loud horns. But still, can you feel the dreams, the tears, the loss, the suffering, the hope, the genius that is captured in that single word, Habinuyah, that gives a rabbi the privilege, the honor, to stand before a congregation and hold a Haggadah that was created in Israel by Jews, that says we hope next year we'll be in the same place as we are this year. Of course, we're not there. We're here. And so the question is, what do we do about this historical miracle? Who do we listen to amidst all the cacophony of voices, all the chorus of everybody who tries to tell us what we should do and how we should vote? Who do we listen to? I have a suggestion. You know, in 1947, when the first completely unacceptable partition plan was given to Ben-Gurion, before it was revised and he accepted it, Ben-Gurion was agonizing about whether he should accept the first draft of the partition plan, and he asked Tabenkin, a friend of his and a labor Zionist leader. And Yosef Tabenkin said to him, I have to go ask two people and then I'll get back to you. And in a little while, Tabenkin came back and he said, I've consulted with my two experts and I believe you have to reject the plan. And Ben-Gurion did. And then Ben-Gurion asked him, tell me, who did you consult with? He said, I consulted with my grandfather and my grandchild. My grandfather, he said, has been dead for 10 years and my grandchild is not born yet. So I asked them. What I am going to ask of you today is to consult with your grandparents, your great-grandparents, your great-great-grandparents, those who are not here, who never saw this, who only dreamed of it, and your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, your great-great-grandchildren who have not yet seen this, but who, God willing, one day will. What would they want you to do? I know, as do you, that Israel is not a perfect place. You want a catalog of criticisms of Israel? Ask any Israeli. They'll tell you. It's not a perfect country. But you remember what the psalmist says? Yivarechecha Hashem mitzion. May God bless you out of Zion. Ura'eh v'tuv Yerushalayim. And may you see the goodness of Jerusalem. Rav Kook said, when a Jew looks at Jerusalem, that Jew should see the goodness of Jerusalem. Not because it's perfect, but because its claim on our hearts is out of its goodness, despite all its problems. When you look at the good of Jerusalem, when you listen to that grandparent who isn't here, when you speak to that grandchild who's not here, what do you owe them? Outside, many of you may have seen, we placed a number of brochures. I want to tell you what they mean. One of them was from an organization called Stand With Us, which is an Israel advocacy group, and one of its most effective areas is on the college campus. If you are in college, you have children in college, you have grandchildren in college, get them this material. Join yourself. Teach them how to answer those who, through ignorance or through prejudice, speak slightingly or offensively about the accomplishments of our ancestors. And for us, there is no excuse for any Jew who cares at all about Israel not to be a member of, quote, the most important organization affecting America's relationship with Israel, AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Because the day is over when our financial contributions alone can save Israel. There was a time when the Golda Meirs of the world stumped across America to get enough money to buy a rifle tomorrow that would literally save the state. But even though Israel needs our contributions, What it needs more than anything else is our voice. We live in America. It is the most powerful country that has ever been known in the history of humanity. If we don't speak up for Israel today in our land, who will see the goodness of Jerusalem? What right do we have not to join, not to let our senators and congressmen and president hear what we have to say? We are a small people. But we have a loud voice. And you will do nothing to honor that grandparent or that grandchild if you are silent. And then there are brochures from the Israeli Tourist Bureau, from the government office that tries to get American Jews to go to Israel. I am pleased and proud that this year all the clergy of Sinai Temple will be in Israel. Some of you will be joining myself and my family on the trip that we'll be taking in 2 weeks. Some of you will be joining Cantor Gol on the trip that he will be taking in June. Rabbi Hirsch will be in Israel. Rabbi Schuldenfrei will be in Israel. How about you? How about you? What do you think your great-great-grandparents would say if they were here today and you said to them, I want you to know for the first time in 2,000 years we have a state of Israel and it's run by Jews and the government are Jews and the army is Jews, but I haven't gone. I haven't seen it. They would weep, as well they should. This is our place. This is our land. We are the most affluent, the richest, most influential Jewish community that has ever been. We have to scream. We have to contribute. We have to join all these organizations. That's how you are heard in this world. What do you think is the impression in Washington if Jewish organizations don't represent Jews? I'm not here this morning to ask you for your money. I want your voice. Israel needs your voice. Israel needs to see you in Jerusalem, in Haifa, in Tel Aviv, in Be'er Sheva, in Eilat. It needs to know that Jews would rather visit Tel Aviv than Paris. It needs to know that American Jews still listen to the voices of their grandparents and their grandchildren. Our Israeli brothers and sisters need to know that we care that the Haggadah now says Yerushalayim HaBnuya, and that we want to help to build it. If not that, why are we here? I believe that a wondrous breed of Jews will spring up from this earth, wrote Theodor Herzl 100 years ago. The Maccabees will rise again. The Jews who will it shall achieve their own state and live at last as free men and women on their own soil. What do you know? He was right. It is a miraculous thing. And who among us doesn't want to go see a miracle? There are 50 days between Pesach, you know, tonight at the Seder we begin counting the Omer, and Shavuot. And at Shavuot, having gone through the first stages of wandering, we receive the Torah. And in Parshat Yitro, when we receive the Torah, we are told that as the people with the shofar gathered around the mountain, the kol shofar holech v'chazek ma'od, the sound of the shofar got louder and louder. And of course, as was pointed out a long time ago by Rabbi Israel Leventhal, that's not possible. Sound doesn't grow over time. Sound dissipates over time. The sound of the shofar gets weaker, not stronger. But he said, the laws of physics don't apply to the history of the Jewish people. The sound of Torah over years has gotten stronger, not weaker. It has grown, not diminished. In other words, if I can put it in terms that we might put it today, once the Jewish people was resolved that there would be no break on our history, we made our horn louder. Forget the breaks. Get out of our way. The one thing that we could do to weaken the state of Israel is to be silent. You don't have to. Don't go. Don't train your kids. Don't influence the policymakers in Washington. You don't have to. But the voice of your grandchildren will ring in your ears that for the first time in thousands of years you had it in your hand and you let it go. I wish that we could take the state for granted. That we could know, as does virtually every population of every state, that it will be here tomorrow and the day after and the day after that. But remember, Israel can only lose one war. Only one. Because if they lose one, there won't be another. And the opinion of the world, as you know, is not right now our friend. So don't delay. Don't hesitate. And please, when you walk out of here today, don't forget. L'shana haba'a b'Yerushalayim habanuya. Next year, may we all be in Jerusalem, knowing that we helped build it with our money, to be sure, but even more, with our hands, with our heart, and with our voice. Please rise for the prayer for the state of Israel, which you will